What?
Oh, you are going
to hard one. Yeah.
Rebbe!
Cantor, what a pleasant surprise! Fancy meeting you here!
I got some lunging.
It happens, it happens. I see Mr. T is here as well.
Hi.
Ah.
Havu Hauptmann.
Perikles, Shmuel Bey's Perikles.
Perikles?
Ches.
How did you get so far?
We did it the old-fashioned way. We skipped.
I'm skipping, I see.
That's the way to do it, I tell you. What can I say? How are things down south?
All right, we have a few minutes before class starts.
Yeah, I guess.
Here's the question.
Assuming Alan's coming, we'll wait.
No, Alan.
I have a question that's bothering me.
Okay.
On the Akeda.
Yes.
I thought Avraham and Sarah were like a team. They do everything together. I think he forgot to ask her and get her permission to do that.
I mean, and if she would have said no, then what?
I mean, he had something.
I don't know if no is an option.
I mean, he killed her. She died from a heart attack, and he didn't even discuss it with her. What kind of husband is this?
The man didn't have a choice. What was he going to do? She would have said no. Now he'd have been in worse shape.
I feel for
Avraham. You see, because poor Avraham, on the one hand, first his wife says, take Hagar. So he takes Hagar. Then she says, what did you take Hagar for? Get rid of Hagar. So now he's got to get rid of Hagar. Poor guy. What do you want for him? He should go start up some more. Come on, give the guy a break already.
She did. She left him. So he took another wife. Nochemol Hagar.
Some people, they never learn the lesson. Six more.
I mean, but how can he do something of that nature without discussing with his wife? I mean.
Unfortunately, her opinion didn't matter here. God said so. That's the beginning.
What kind of example is a husband set for the Jewish people? He can do make decisions on his own. What's the sort of?
Shem says to do it. I'm going to do it. This is non-negotiable. The bottom line, did he bring the boy home?
Huh?
Was he healthy?
Maybe she would have explained to him that Ola doesn't mean to kill the guy. Maybe just put him down on the block. She would have explained it to him.
Go no. All right, nice to see everyone. Jaime, as always, a pleasure to see you. Just see your eye. I take it to Patty, that's you in telephone land?
It is me in telephone land.
Ah, lucky guess.
Might even hear Cadmus.
Oh, I didn't even know that you had a Cadmus.
I had a Chatul. This is a Cadmus, who's my next door neighbor, who comes to visit now.
He's just visiting. This isn't a member of the household.
No, no. He just visits. Sometimes he stays overnight, but he's just a visitor.
Okay. Good. And Alan's sitting shiver for the Broncos. What's going on?
he had a bad headache, so he's dealing with that.
Wishing you a four shalema.
Thank you.
Okay. We're up to Perikles. For those of you who might have not have been here last week, let's just bring you up to speed. So David HaMelech, after many, many parakim of first battling Shaul and then having competitions from Shaul's son, at this point is officially David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayim. He is the 100% undoubtable leader of Israel. He has everybody's support. He built himself a palace. Then last week he wanted to build himself a Beis HaMikdash. He said, you know what? It's not so nice that I'm sitting here in a palace and the Aron is still sitting in a tent. Went to Nosson HaNavi. He says, you know what? I think this would be a good idea. Nosson says, like, it sounds like a great idea to me. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I don't think it is such a good idea. For whatever reason, various reasons, probably the major reason being because the person who builds the Beis HaMikdash is going to have to be a man of peace. David HaMelech fought many wars, and it wasn't wrong, it was right. It was the right thing he did. It just made him the wrong person for the job. So because of that, he said, listen, your son Shlomo, he'll be the build the Beis HaMikdash. David says, listen, that doesn't, I'm happy to hear for Shlomo. I wish I could do it myself. Time to move on. So what's David going to do now? David HaMelech is going to do whatever he can do now to help out. Obviously, if Shlomo is going to have to be somebody, a man of peace, any potential war that's going to be done is going to have to be done now. So David gets to it. So let's take a look, beginning of Perek Ches, of Shmuel Beis, does as follows. Vayi acharei kein, vayach David es plishtim, vayichan ein, vayikav David es mesek ha'ama miyad plishtim. Right, so David goes and he attacks the Philistines. He takes the mesek ha'ama. What is a mesek ha'ama? How do you even translate those words?
Harness of the arm.
The harness of the arm. Oh, that was helpful. Thank you very much.
I have no idea what that is.
No idea what a harness of an arm is. And why would he want to take it? Out of all the things. So let's take a look at the first of the sources. And it says, believe it or not, it's related to this week's Parsha. Parsha's told us. Huh. Who knew? Now you all know. Es Mesek Ha'ama. So the Radak. And this pasuk explains to us. Number one on the source sheet. Yesh Bo Medrash B'Braisa D'Rabbi Elazar. Perek. Shoshim v'sheish. Again, it's a Pirkei D'Rabbi Elazar says what it is. Kishaba Avimelech Yitzchak Amalo Re'ei Ro'o Re'inu Ki Hayah Hashem Imach. In this week's Parsha, right, not a lot happens in this week's Parsha with Yitzchak. Right, what happens is at the beginning of the Parsha, you have the focus of Yaakov and Esav. They're born. Then they, eventually at the end of the Parsha, they're going to try to fight with each other to get the rights of the firstborn. In between, there's very little that happens. At one point, Avimelech, the king of Plishtim, comes over to Yitzchak and says, listen, seems that God's on your side. We know that eventually Hashem's going to give your descendants all of these lands. Therefore, Krosi Manubris, Shivua, Shein Zacha, Yerishasaras Plishtim, Krosi Mahembris, Shivua, Rehem Shivua. So he says, let's make an agreement. Promise that you won't attack us. Now, also Yitzchak, Karas Abba Achas, we Mesag Achamor. He takes off a piece of the Mesag Ha'ama of his Chamor, of his donkey. He says, here it is. As long as you have this, you're safe. We want
what
to
is?
What was that?
What is it?
So, Judy told us. It is a?
Harness of the arm.
It's the what?
Harness of the arm.
The harness of the arm.
I have no idea what we're talking about yet.
So again, so it seems that it was part of what the donkey wore. Part of the donkey's harness.
It's a harness. A leather harness?
H-A-R-N-E-S-S. Harness.
Okay.
Right? He says, okay, here, take this. And as long as you have this, you're safe. And therefore, we did not have the right to attack the Plishtim and to take their lands until Ukshemelach David Rasalovo Emeret Plishtim Ohayachol Mikoch Osabris. So David says, let me finish up the job. Let me capture all the lands here. But he couldn't capture the Plishtim. Why not? They had this Meseg Ha'ava. They had this piece of the harness from Yitzhak, which as long as they held it, they could not be attacked. So David HaMelech, in order to allow us to capture that land, first gets his hands on this Meseg Ha'ama. Once he has that, he has a right to attack. Right? This is not that different from something that we saw two Prakim ago. You remember the Ivrim and the Pischim? Ring a bell? At all? Bueller?
Not ringing a bell to me.
Yeah, of course you do. Remember, he said that he's going to go and take care of these. That David HaMelech says, I will reward whoever gets rid of the blind and the lame people. And remember, we said, wow, that's not very nice. And we had different opinions. What are we talking about here? And one opinion was that they put up a statue of a blind person and a lame person. Who was the blind person? That was Yitzchak. Yitzchak was blind. Who was lame?
Yaakov.
Yaakov, correct, Ted. Right? That again, that these people had made a treaty with Yitzchak and Yaakov. Until you got rid of the treaty, you couldn't attack. So to hear, there was this Meseg Ha'ama. So again, so David HaMelech wants to take care of all of the various types of conquering, any war that has to be done. So by the time he's done with his monarchy, he's ready to take over, the land will be totally conquered. Remember, going back a while ago, Yehoshua was never successful in conquering the entirety of the land of Israel. So now David's going to step in and clean up whatever Yehoshua didn't do. In Pasuk Aleph, we take care of the Plishtim. He got here this Meseg Ha'ama, and then he takes over. Pasuk Bei. He then attacks Moab. And he says, all the people from Moab lie on the floor. And he takes a rope. And he keeps counting. One, two, three. The first two rope lengths, he killed. The third rope length, he allowed to survive. He killed two-thirds of them. And the last third he kept as slaves. That's not very nice. That's not very Jewish. Why did he do that? Did David have any relationship with Moab?
It's not so important.
His family.
His grandmother was from Moab.
His great grandmother was from Moab, right? What was her name?
Ruth.
I've said from time to time, when things get better, we should have an Edos trip for Shavuos. We should go to Moab and to see, you know, if we should read the book of Ruth in Moab. That would be special, I think.
Different Moab.
Yeah, it's all the same to me. It's the only one, the only one I want to go to. Right, it's a lot closer. As soon as the numbers get down, we're on our way. David, if you're
and
back,
we know that we know she's still around, Ruth, at this point.
Yeah, you know, whatever. She's the old gray mare. She ain't what she used to be, but you know, she's still all right.
Yep.
So David was a descendant of Moab, and as Judy was telling us, if you remember back at the end of Shmuel Aleph, at one point, David HaMelech was very concerned that Shaul was chasing him, and he figured if Shaul's going to get smart, he's going to wipe out my family. So he said, I want to go, and I want to protect my parents, my siblings, and they're not safe in Israel, so he sent them to Moab. What happened when they were sent to Moab? In fact, the king of Moab said, I'll protect them. But as soon as David left, he killed them all. Except for one brother who escaped to Ammon.
So I guess he didn't send Ruth there.
Well, again, Ruth was he wasn't. All we know is he sent his parents and his siblings. We don't know that. We have no idea that he sent his great grandmother.
Okay.
So, as payback for that, David becomes king.
He wipes out 2/3 and then enslaves the other.
Correct. Right. So, in fact, that backstory is number 2 on the source sheet. We did it outside. We don't have to do it again. So, again, so first he takes care of the Plishtim. The Plishtim, we know, of course, are where Gaza is now. Right. Gaza is part of the 5 major Plishti cities. So that's in the southwest of Israel. Then afterwards, he goes after Moab. Where is Moab? So Moab is in the Transjordan. Right? So that's on the other side, wipes them out as well. Next, two countries. Let's keep the streak alive. Next. What does he do next? He attacks Hadarezer, who is the king of Aram Tsova. Where is Aram Tsova? Has anyone ever heard of Aram Tsova?
No.
So, if anybody here is a Bible scholar, the oldest current manuscript of the Chumash that we have is what's known as the Aleppo Codex. The Aleppo Codex originally comes from, this is an easy question.
Yeah, Syria.
Syria, from Aleppo. I don't remember which of our great politicians asked what's Aleppo when asked about it. The Aleppo Codex, which is housed in the Shrine of the Book, right? I think it's together with the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? Goes back to before the time of the Rambam, right? It is believed that the Rambam actually used the Aleppo Codex when he wrote his opinions as to how the Chumash should be, the Tanakh should be written. The Aleppo Codex is called in Hebrew the Keter Aram Tsova. And it's called the Keter Aram Tsova because Aram Tsova is the way we refer to Syria. So basically, we attacked Gaza, David. That's in Pasuk Aleph. In Pasuk Beis, he attacked Jordan in modern day locations. The third Pasuk, he knocked out Syria. Isn't it?
Isn't Syria called the Adam Damascus? No, isn't it?
Nah, the city's called Damascus. It's called Syria, sometimes it's called.
Yeah.
But Syria and Aram Tsova are basically the same place. As opposed to Aram Naharaim is a different place.
Aram Naharaim is north of
Aram Tsova. Aram Tsova is also what we would call modern-day Syria.
Yeah, it's the north. It's north of the Damascus.
So, looking at number 3, Yaakov karas brisin ame haaretz. Right. So, Yaakov also, if you remember, he also made a treaty. Who did he make a treaty with? The name of the place where he made this treaty was either Galaad or Yigar Sahadusa. These are all parshas coming up. You got to listen to the laning. But I'll tip you off. It's Lavan. If you remember, after Yaakov leaves with his wives and children, he gets tracked down by Lavan. And in the end, there is a treaty made. So what was the treaty? The treaty is that Yaakov won't harm him. So again, we've got a problem here. So that's the third pasuk. Yaakov koras prisim ame haaretz. Amar lo lovan yodoi yudin shakosh baruch hu also litin lezarches klaretz l'sheil. Tichrosim yibrish shvua sheinso yorshim esaretz haram. Right, so each one of these lands we had a problem with, right? We had a problem with the Plishim because Yitzchak made a treaty, right? We had a problem with Moab. We didn't talk about it so much, but Moab, it says, Altiskerbam, we're not supposed to attack Ammon and Moab. And now we have a problem with Aram because of Yaakov's treaty. So Karasimo Brishrua, the Hitzimo Matsevis Oven, maybe it's Banavimo Brishrua. So in fact, they had a pile of stones, right? A gal is a pile of stones, a gal eight, as it was called. Says to his sons, listen, let's make a treaty. And they did. So listen, this agreement is when the day comes, you can't attack us. So again, this similar to the other ones, the treaty had to be removed in order to allow them to do this. What's going on now is we have David HaMelech filling in all the gaps of the Eretz Yisrael HaShlema. Right, so he goes and he takes over Gaza finally, takes over Moab finally, takes over Aram finally. So there he is, so one step after another, he is taking over.
Excuse me, this goes back to a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the treaty that I think Abraham made with...
Correct, I said that.
I mean, but all David does is abrogate all these things what good is his word?
Well, the idea is as follows. The treaties were made, as we said, either they're all contingent treaties. These were not made forever. Again, the contingency of these treaties is as long as this item exists, the treaty exists. So by removing, whether it is the Mesek HaAmor or the pile of stones or these statues, the rule is from the beginning. If you can remove it, that abrogates the treaty. So because of that, now it's interesting. There are further arguments made that in many of these cases, it wasn't David who actually attacked. But if you remember, the Plishtim had attacked us many times, right? In the time of Shaul, etc. Shaul was killed by the Plishtim. Shaul, his sons, right? So therefore, the argument was in those cases that he didn't even have to do it since they have already broken the treaty. All right. Just as a, by the way, those of you who are following inside, Pasuk Gimel, there's something special about the last word in Pasuk Gimel, and that is? Any notes?
I don't know what the last word is. I get the Euphrates River is what I've got.
Okay, right. The word is pras, like Euphrates. But this is an odd case. If you look inside a cloth, if you look inside an actual scroll, the word is read, but it's not written.
I'm sorry, say that again. It's read, but not written?
Correct. If I was reading the scroll, I would read the word Nahar Pras, but it wouldn't be there.
Then how do you know to read it?
Yeah. Dun, da, da, dun, dun, da, da, dun, dun. We have such a tradition.
But what signals us to read that?
Again, in the scroll, there is no signal. You have to know to read it.
Uh-huh.
It's what's called a kri velo kisiv. You read it, but it's not written there.
And then what is the purpose of not having it written there?
That's a great question. Why was it done this way? For this one, I don't have an answer.
None?
Nada. I don't have an answer.
Do you have a speculation?
No, not even. I mean, we believe as follows, that in general, this concept of kri uksiv, we have this throughout the Torah, right? There's certain words that are written one way and read the other way. And sometimes it's close, and sometimes it's not close. For example, the word na'ara is oftentimes written without the final hey. But we read it as if there was a hey there. However, there are other words, particularly in the Tochacha, there are two words where it's written one way and we read it a totally different way. And we believe that what the Gemara tells us, that's halacha l'Moshe Misinai. That is a tradition that goes back to Moses. That's the standard approach. Why?
But so a word that doesn't have a hey, but you read it with a hey, does it have a different meaning without the hey?
Yeah, without a hey, it means a boy, and with a hey, it means a girl.
Uh-huh.
Maybe at a certain age, there's no difference.
That's right. So again, when for binary people, there is a difference.
We're in the world right now. There's no difference.
So again, but therefore, right? So this, I'm just pointing it out. This is one of the rare occasions, right? You'll sometimes have different spellings to have a word totally missing. This is a rare one, but it's here. Now, David HaMelech, again, as we said, is the purpose here for him is to prepare for the ultimate building of the Beis HaMikdash. So as we said, there's going to have to be a time of peace. Shlomo HaMelech can't be going to war. So because of that, David says, well, I'm a warrior. I already have blood on my hands. Might as well let's finish it up. But because of that, he's fighting and victoriously all these wars. So in the first three psukim, he went and he attacked the Plishtim. He went and he attacked Moab. And he went and he attacked Aram. And he was successful in all three battles. Not only is he successful by taking the land, but of course also there's spoils of war. So Dalva Yoko Dami Menu Elaf Ushvameos Parashim, Vesrim Elaf Ishragli, Vayake David es Koharechev, Vayosermi Menu Meya Rachev. So he goes and he in fact at this point takes in. He takes captives, he takes animals, right? He in fact at this point is taking the spoils of war to build up the country. Very interesting what is mentioned in this pasuk, and perhaps Steve can explain a little bit, is they would go and they would hamstring the horses. Now, I am not...
Not nice.
It's not nice, right? Why would they hamstring the horses?
So they couldn't run away.
Couldn't be used against them. Used on chariots.
Remember, horses in those days were the tanks of our days. So therefore, they would go and they would do this in order to make sure that they would not be able to rebuild their military. Once we have beaten the Plishtim, right, we're going to leave them there. But obviously, they're going to be looking for revenge at some point. Therefore, what do? Right, we go and it's the equivalent of blowing up the airplanes in Egypt while they're still on the floor, right? We go and we attack, we blow them up there. We don't got to worry that they're going to come after us. It happens to be that this is still problematic. I don't know much about horses. My daughter would know more about it than I would. But what we assume is that, when a horse breaks its leg, when a horse can't, we shoot horses. Right? This is something that we assume that since we can't make it any better, we can't help them, I'm sorry, we put an end to it.
To hamstring them isn't to break their leg, it's to cut the tendon, the Achilles tendon.
Right, which again makes them lame, I assume.
Yes, they're permanently lame, and it's damaging.
The horse snapped its tendon, I imagine we'd probably put it down.
That is true.
Right? So it's the same thing. So therefore, source number 5 is bothered by this. So we understand that there's a concept, which we've never discussed at length, but maybe we will one day, of Tsar Bali Chaim. We have to treat animals in a certain appropriate manner. So it says, Amar Abayi, or 5, Amar Kri, Susayim Te'aker. So it says in the Chumash that, listen, hamstring the animals. So Hikshir Rabbeinu Harav Rav Al-Khanan. Amanda Ma'adomar, Tsar Bali Chaim Da Raisa. My Raya, my Yeshua Doma Shani Hasfad Al Pia Dibra Abba. He says, I don't understand. Isn't this a violation of a commandment? Right? The commandment that we have that we have to treat animals in a proper way.
In a humane way, and this is not humane.
Correct. So then there's two approaches. One approach is that perhaps this was some God-given exception. The other thing is that, you know, yes, we have to treat animals in a humane way, but sometimes there is a need, a greater need, right?
But why not just take them all?
Right. We don't rent, right? So, for example, the majority opinion is that Torah law is opposed to hunting for sport. But we do support hunting for a purpose. Right, I can hunt if I need the food. I can hunt
right.
if I need the skin.
To sustain life, yes.
Right, you know, obviously, if there is a purpose for this, we are allowed to do it. But just to do it for no purpose, right? In this case, there was a purpose. Right, there was a military purpose for us. There was, in general, no, we don't go around hamstringing horses. Right, if there's a problem, it's interesting. I remember one time I took the kids to Frontier Days in Cheyenne. Anybody else ever do Frontier Days? As a New Yorker,
yes.
Thank you, Marsha. Frontier Days is kind of the equivalent. Coming from New York into Frontier Days is like landing on Mars.
Why?
It was just, and I said to the kids beforehand, I said, listen, the people are going to look really strange to you. You look the same way to them. Just remember that. So I remember I went to buy my tickets to the rodeo, and I gave them my credit card, and they said to me, zip code? And I said, 10033. How many times have you gotten that one today? So surprisingly, not a lot. I remember that they were selling guns there, which didn't surprise me. But they had
Didn't you get a couple rifles for hunting?
I can either confirm nor deny these rumors. You know,
okay.
Long-standing policy of not responding to rumors.
Yeah.
So they were selling pink Uzi machine guns.
Oh, geez.
So, but they were also, that we weren't that interested, but they were actually giving away free horses.
Really?
Yes. So I went to talk to the fellow. Devorah always wanted a horse. Devorah has put in a request for a horse. And you know what? If nothing else, this one would have been cheap. So I went to the guy and I said, why are you, like, what's wrong with these horses? Why are you giving them away? Are they like, so they said that there's a problem of that there are too many wild horses running around.
Right. There is a population issue.
Therefore, they capture these horses and they give it away to people. So I said, well, would you have a horse that would be appropriate for my apartment in Manhattan?
That's not where you keep a horse.
So they said, well, how far are you from the nearest riding area?
Right.
I said, well, you know, you got Van Cortlandt Park is around 3 miles from us. He said, so that should be fine. Which one you want?
There is a barn in Manhattan.
So, yeah, but they're in the Bronx, right? Right next to us. Walking distance, there is a riding trail.
Okay.
Actually, we didn't take one. Right? So, again, if I decided to go hamstringing those horses, that would not be appropriate. But here...
Right. That means you have to put them down. If you hamstring a horse, you have to put them down.
Right. But in this case, well, the reason they were doing it is, you know, to again, for self-defense, that's a different story. That's why this would be allowed. Okay. Vav ayosem David nitzivim b'aram damesek. Bati aram l'david l'avadim nosei mencha v'ayasha adonai yisdav b'chol asher alach. So in fact, David took over this area of Aram Damesek, right? This sounds more like what we're used to nowadays. Damesek sounds an awful lot like the city.
Damascus.
Damascus, correct. It's amazing, by the way. I happen to be teaching Yehoshua now at Yeshiva, and I've been reading some archaeological works, and it's amazing how many of the biblical names survive, forget Israel outside. For example, the city of the capital of Jordan is known as
Amman.
Amman. Amman is the same different city as Ammon.
Yeah.
Right? That's, and it hasn't moved. Right? The capital city of Ammon, right? As in Ammon and Moab. What's called Rabat Bnei Ammon. And that is the location of Amman to this day. Damascus and Damascus. Nothing has changed. Right? It's amazing that we're talking about thousands of years ago in the Bible. And in fact, you can go right now and find the cities in most cases quite easily. Now, is Syria part of Israel?
It isn't.
We
conquered it.
Right, so what's the status of it? So let's say I would go, I say, you know what, things are nice, and maybe I'll move to Syria. I've heard so many good things about it these days. So what's the story with Syria? So that's a major discussion, because Syria was not part of the land that was promised to Avram Avinu.
But we conquered it anyway?
But because we conquered it anyway.
Why? Because he had a good general.
Well, you know, why not? That's kind of the, because he could.
Was it Fishti, the Philistines or the Canaanites?
The Philistines, they
were long gone.
No, they were nowhere near that, right? The Philistines are in the south. Syria's in the north.
So who was there?
Did he go for Syria just to wipe out another possible threat?
Right, so that's the question. So if you look, the Gemara in Gittin, in number 6, talks about what's the status of Syria, right? I mean, on the one hand, it wasn't considered part of biblical Israel, but it was captured by the Jewish people, led by a Jewish king, and it's an area that bordered Israel. So that leads to an interesting question. What is the halachic status of Syria? If you go and you decide to expand the borders, so the Gemara tells us, number 6, Tan Rabbana, Shlosha Drachim, Shavsa Surya Laret Yisrael, Ubushlosha Luchutz Laretz. In 3 ways, it has the same rules as Israel, and in 3 ways, it's considered part of Chutz Laretz, outside of Israel, part of the diaspora. It says, Afra Tame Kachutz Laretz. On the one hand, the land does not have the holiness, meaning that you have to be careful, because maybe there are people buried at any place. It's not like Israel where they're careful. So there's a rule that if I live in Israel and I own even a non-Jewish Eved, I'm not allowed to sell him to Chutz Laretz. If I do that, he can go free. So too, if I would send, if I would send him to Syria, that's considered Chutz Lartz. And similarly, there's a rule in Gittin, which is not relevant for now. However, Chayavus b'maisa v'shvius. You have to keep Shemitah in Syria. Produce, you have to give Trumas b'maisa.
I don't understand. It's considered outside. Why would that be so?
Again, the idea that it's not really considered outside. It's kind of a split. So why so last line? So kibush yachid shmei kibush. Because when an individual captures something for the sake of the Jewish people, it becomes Israel. I mean, this is international law. Correct?
Well, that's not quite so. I mean, the Arabs conquered what was whatever Palestine at the time, you know, in the years whatever 600-700, but that doesn't mean that they have any right to it now.
Correct, because since then we've captured it.
We took it back.
Right. The idea being that you know when it's a very odd law, but basic international law is if I go to your house and throw you out, I'm a ganav and the house is still yours. If I go next door to Canada and I throw them out, then it becomes America.
Well, on the other hand, what you're saying is Syria considered the part holy today? I mean, do you have to do Miser and all that today?
Right. The idea being is that once it is given, the thought is that once it has that status, it doesn't lose it. Again, we might not have rights to it at this point, but if I decide to, now remember, there was a Syrian Jewish community living in Syria for hundreds of years.
Sure. For a long, long time.
Right? And they were, and those were many, many happy centuries they lived there.
Yeah, but the Jews were not in charge, as it were.
No,
you know?
They were not. They were just like it's like us in America right now. Unless you believe the anti-Semites, then we are in charge.
I like that one.
Whatever, you know, we're always a little in charge, right? Either we used to have Ivanka, now we have Kamala's husband. You know, we always have our finger in it.
Right.
You know, we're never really in charge, but we're close enough. We're close enough. Right now, you know, Kamala Harris's Rebbetzin is Jewish. That's what we have now.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all we need.
So the comment here is that to a certain extent, it would seem when David HaMelech won this war, he endowed it with a certain status of Israel. Now, there's a discussion, what exactly does this mean?
So wouldn't that also be true of Transjordan?
So the Transjordan is even more so.
I'm saying, so even today, it would it still have that status?
Yeah, so arguably, if I was, so it happens to be that Amman is beyond the Transjordan, but the
right.
Largest city in Jordan, I believe, is Madaba, and I believe that Madaba is definitely part of
in
the Transjordan. Petra, I think also.
That's Transjordan.
Correct. So I just happened to be checking out the Jordanian topography recently, and I noticed that Amman is just beyond. You know, it's not that far out. It happens to be that the border curves in beforehand, because that's more Amun than Moab. That's why it's called Amman. So the idea being that is that even though David here conquered it for himself, it still has a certain amount. Rashi says, what do you mean it's for himself? So Rashi says he just did this, you know, for the sake of enriching his coffers. But he wasn't really done that. Ultimately, he wasn't planning on dividing it among the tribes. Tosfos doesn't really agree with that. Tosfos says, Pirush HaKuntres, number 8.
Okay,
That's what Rashi thinks. Avol b'sifrei b'farish tam acher. It says the mashmal lefi shalo haisa adayin kol yitzisol kavusha k'da amar hasam samuch l'paltura shalcha. Lo harash l'pirish yivusi. So he says that the reason that this was separate is because it's okay, Tosa says, to expand the borders of Israel, but it's only okay if you already have the entirety of Israel captured. The problem is David HaMelech hadn't captured everything else before he turned to Syria. So what's an example? What hasn't David captured? Well, there's a very big example out there, and that is Jerusalem. Jerusalem was still controlled by the Yavusi, by the Jebusites.
Wait a minute, but I thought he was living in Jerusalem at this point. That he'd made where he was living was in Jerusalem. Did I lose you? Hello? Anybody there?
I'm here. I can't hear anything else.
Oh, hi, Judy. Did everybody just disappear?
Well, the rabbi's frozen.
Oh, I don't hear Ted either. I don't hear anybody but you.
There's Ted.
There's Ted.
We lost the rabbi.
Do you think he'll go out and come back in? Is that how he does it?
Maybe.
We'll just wait.
He was in Ir David, right? That's where he was.
Exactly. I thought that he had set up the city of David at that point, mm-hmm. in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And that's when he makes the site, you know, the idea comes to him about a Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
Okay.
At least that's...
Here he is.
Ah, you back?
I am back. Someone accidentally kicked out the wire.
Oh. So I was asking, wasn't David... Didn't he set up the palace in Yerushalayim?
Yes, but he did not have the Har HaBayis. Right, he doesn't. As we said, the very end of this book, he's finally going to be able to get the Har HaBayis.
I guess I didn't realize that.
But the idea of Tosos is saying is that the...
he's not finished capturing Yerushalayim.
That's why... If you have the entirety of Israel and then you build upon it, that's undoubtedly part of Israel. But if
right.
you go and take parts of that are beyond the borders before you have the borders themselves, that doesn't work. Okay.
Just out of curiosity, does he have the Mount of Olives at that point or not?
I think not.
Okay, because that's...
He has half of the city of Jerusalem. Where you drew the wall, I don't know. But I know that he does not have the Har HaBayis.
Okay. I'm just trying to get a feel for how far extends that he doesn't have, that he hasn't captured, but I don't think we're going to know that right
now. Right. So I've been reading these in Hebrew. If you remember, two summers ago, we had a fellow, Yehuda Landi, who came to the shul.
Right.
Made a presentation. So he just came out with a book on Yehoshua. And just fascinating stuff. I really, on the one hand, I very much love his stuff. On the other hand, I don't know if there are 10 other people in the world who do. I don't know if he's making a living off of this. But anybody who's interested, he really does a fascinating job of really having a handle of what's going on in the archaeology world and how it affects us. So I just yesterday, he has these topographical maps where he goes from the Jordan to the Mediterranean, and he gives you the altitude. And it's interesting how you see that Jerusalem really is the highest point.
Yes.
You know? So, you know, things, I think, like,
We know this, don't we? I mean, that's a common piece of knowledge.
Right. So, again, we always say it, but he just shows you on the map how it works out.
I see. Just like the Dead Sea is the lowest place.
That's the lowest place in the world, isn't it?
Right. And that's common knowledge.
Zion, let's we're a little bit behind. We have to pick up the pace a little here. So, if you come down to Ishil Te Azov, so he takes the shields of gold from Aram and he brings them to Jerusalem. What's he collecting these for? Again, he's going to need gold. He's going to need precious metals if he's going to build the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
I'm using this as an opportunity. And from these other cities, he takes a lot of nechoshes, a lot of copper. Again, we're going to need a lot of copper to build the Beis HaMikdash. So he's going, and he's, even though he can't build the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to do whatever he can to make it that it's going to be easy as possible for his son Shlomo. So this fellow from Hamas, here's that what happened. So this Hadarezer from Syria, he had an enemy, and the enemy was very grateful to David
for taking him out.
Right. So if the show is appreciated, he said gold, silver, and copper. So what does David do with that?
He donates
it. So all this, he goes and he says, this is going to be holy. This is going to be sanctified. This is all for the Beis HaMikdash. So between his wars and all the spoils that he gets, and on top of that, this, he's taking advantage of everything. From all of these cities, right? He's went and he's attacked all of his neighbors. And he's taking on plenty of spoils. But he asked David Shame Beshuva Meakosa Asaram Bigay Melach Shmona Asaralaf. And he went and he killed 18,000 and he makes a statement there. But Yasam Edom Nitzivim Bechol Edom, some Nitzivim, but he called Edom Avadim with David, but Yosha Mayas as David Bechol Asharalaf. Not only that, but he puts guards in the land of Edom. Edom is on the south.
So the garrisons. Like forts.
Right? He puts forts there. And in fact, basically he says, listen, I'm the boss here, and you're going to pay tax to me. Or else I'll do to you what I did to them, and they get the message. And with that, David is now basically not only in charge of Israel, but all of the surrounding countries. He's obviously the regional power, as we say at this point. And David is at this point the king, and he does tzedakah and mishpat. What is tzedakah? Tzedakah is, of course, charity. Mishpat is justice. How could it be both? How could it be tzedakah and mishpat? Right? Right, mishpat is that you're doing what people deserve. Tzedakah is you're going beyond it. So how could it be both? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin in number 9 discusses this, and it has two opinions. He said tzedakah and mishpat means that he in fact was very into making settlements. And he, as a judge, he would try to set up things in a way that he would have people work things out by themselves. He wanted to promote peace in the land and getting people to settle their differences, that is the way that he would do it. That was the idea behind it. The second approach was that he would do tzedakah mishpat, meaning first he would do mishpat. I say, you owe me $100,000. He says, in fact, that's true. But then he would reach into his pocket and he would pay the money. He would do mishpat, I would get what I deserve. And he would do tzedakah, he would help you out as well. Number two, so again, we'll just skim over that. Look quickly at number 10. Number 10 makes a fascinating statement. It's a medrash from Mishlei. says Vayesimcha l'melech asos mishpat utzdaka. Says that you were put here to do mishpat utzdaka. Nemar b'shlomo it's mishpat utzdaka, v'nemar David mishpat utzdaka. These words are used both by here by David, and then later on when Shlomo becomes the king, he also is told to do this. Where does it say it? So he says, "Minayin d'ksiv vayhi David osei mishpat utzdaka chol amo v'nemar b'shlomo mishpat utzdaka." Why does it say the same words by father and son? Magid akasuk shechachmaso shel Shlomo shkua kechachmaso shel David vechachmaso shel David shkua kechachmaso shel Shlomo. It's here to teach us that David, that Shlomo was as smart as David, and David was as smart as Shlomo. So that's a fascinating statement there. Besides being a great warrior and very pious, he has Solomonic wisdom. So again, at this point, David is doing everything right. Let's just finish up the parak. Who else did he have in his cabinet? Tezayin v'Yoav ben Tzruya al Tzava v'Yehoshaphat ben Achilud Maskir. Yoav ben Tzruya was his general. Yehoshaphat was his secretary. V'Tzadok ben Achitov v'Achimel ben Avyasur Kohanim v'Tzruya Sofer. And he also said these are the names of the Kohen Gadols, and also the person that was the, I'm not sure if the difference was his scribe. So again, he had this entire cabinet of people that were very loyal to him. And with that, we have here David. So at this point, David is probably at his high point. At this point, David HaMelech has everything going for him. He is militarily successful. He has tremendously high approval ratings. The economy has never been better. And there is peace in the land. Let's see. All right. Everybody should be well. Till next week.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Ted, Ivan, good to hear or see you somewhat.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks, Rabbi.
All righty, Shalom. And Larry, too.
Thank you.
And Steve.
Steve Shalom.